Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. For this episode, we are talking offense. Doing the 2019 offensive preview, we're going to talk about the entire offense instead of breaking it up by podcast into each individual thing. I'm going to try to make this pretty quick. We've talked about some of the changes. I'm not going to talk about too much scheme. Some of that I'm leaving for the Patreon subscribers, and I'll be getting some offensive videos up there shortly now that it's in game week and Boise isn't going to have a whole lot to do looking at anybody doing media stuff. So now's a good time to go ahead and do that. We'll release a good bit about Wednesday, Thursday this week, and certainly some on Friday. So plenty of updates coming there. And just a reminder that once the season comes, once the Boise State game is played, then I will be doing a post-game analysis as always last year, and I'll be hosting that live for those of you who are above the requisite level on Patreon, and those who will have questions and so on will be able to ask those as we get moving forward. Anyhow, before we get started, let's go ahead and talk about my first sponsor, and that is EPR Creations. EPR Creations partners with small businesses, with individual brands. They've worked with major universities for website development, online strategy planning, branding, marketing. If you want a better web presence, EPR Creations is the answer to that. Give them a holler. Let them know you heard about them from the Unconquered Podcast. Information in the show notes. Okay, let's go ahead and get to it. So first and foremost, all I can say about what has gotten to me from camp about the offense is the best way to summarize it is night and day. So one of my best practice sources who has seen a lot of football, who knows the game extraordinarily well, was very concerned about some things going into last year, was concerned obviously about the depth situation at offensive line, felt like there were some issues there, and was uncertain about the level of coordination on the offense. Well, that is the opposite this year. My three best sources on this are all very confident about what Briles and Briles' group of people, basically the people who are running the offense, and it's Kendall Briles' offense, along with Clements running the running game stuff, and then Briles brought in his own QC guys and his own GAs and so on. That group is running the offense, period. And those guys know what they're doing. It is well coordinated. It is organized and unified on that side of the ball. And none of that was true last year. It was not well coordinated. It was not, in many cases, coordinated at all. It was disorganized and it was not unified, both from the staff side and looking at the players' buy-in to the staff. This year, well, Briles knows what he's doing and has communicated that very clearly, and the players have bought into that. And Clements is of one mind with Briles and what they're doing, working closely together, and just the whole system is just set up exceptionally well. And a few things before we get into the analysis of individual position groups, I want to bring up a little bit of discussion about Briles' offense in general. And we'll talk about this at different points during the year. But you'll hear me talk about the Briles system or the Briles offense at different points. And it's important to note that Briles, and actually I had one of my best sources actually sent me a note, late last week or early this week, saying people who describe what the current OC in Tallahassee does as the Briles system are off base. It's better to understand what they do as the Briles philosophical approach rather than the Briles system. And that's a good way to put it. I couldn't put that any better myself, so I just went ahead and read you what was sent to me. because Briles has a clear philosophy and a set of principles that govern everything, and then is extremely flexible with how those things get implemented. But there are certain non-negotiables that are philosophical that are just going to get, we're going to see some of those things over the course of the year. The use of space, the use of splits and motion and tempo in particular to create, to force the defense to play, to simplify, to get guys out of the box, and ultimately to create seams in the defense. So a number of things, those are just philosophical things. And there's some philosophical things up front that we'll talk about more on the video side of things. But once you get past that, there's a tremendous amount of flexibility when it comes to accommodating personnel and adjusting to personnel. And actually, there's a lot of similarities between Briles' approach and Jimbo Fisher's approach in terms of the overall flexibility of the offense, the kinds of adjustments that can be made year to year, week to week. Briles can flex and wrinkle and add wrinkles and take advantage of or compensate for personnel. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Baylor versus North Carolina bowl game a couple of years ago, which I covered because I was covering North Carolina, and I broke that down X's and O's. I did the X's and O's videos on that for Inside Carolina on the 24/7 network on that game. And Baylor didn't have a healthy quarterback for that game. They literally did not have a quarterback. They'd had all their quarterbacks get hurt. So Briles came in and they rushed for, if I remember right, 484 yards, something like that in that game. They rushed for 684 yards, I think, and over 800 yards of offense. Now, North Carolina had about 800 yards of offense too, but they didn't have 600 plus yards on the ground. Briles basically came in with the same basic principles, the same philosophy, and said, okay, well, we can't throw downfield with our quarterback because of this, but we can still do these things that fit our personnel, and we can do these things a little better if we put this guy at quarterback for this play, this guy at quarterback for this play, and we're just going to find ways to make it work. And they had over 800 yards total offense in that game without a quarterback. And that tells you how flexible that philosophy, to correct myself there, but the Briles approach can be. They have a set of principles and a set of things that's going to define how they're going to do it. They're going to operate out of the shotgun. There's going to be very few, maybe fewer than 10 plays, I'm guessing, under center this year. There will be a few, but very few. They're going to operate out of the shotgun. They're going to operate with a variety of splits from the wide receivers that are going to be wider generally than the norm. And they're going to challenge you downfield to force you to have to cover those receivers vertically. There's some philosophical stuff that's going to stay the same, but all sorts of other stuff is going to flex and bend to the personnel. So the key thing there is that what Briles did is he did not just bring a set of plays. He didn't bring a playbook to Tallahassee and literally didn't bring a playbook. That's not what makes the Briles system the Briles system. It's all about how it's installed and coordinated and planned to work with personnel and then adjusted week to week. That's what distinguishes Briles and those who really understand the excellent offensive coordinators. Jimbo Fisher was one. Briles might be, I think Briles is probably a better coordinator than Fisher was. And when you look at this, Florida State was completely lacking that last year. They had a rigid system that this is what we're going to do. Here are the plays that we're running. Here's how we're going to do it. And when the personnel became limited and the core plays didn't work, they didn't have any counters. There wasn't a, okay, well, this isn't working, but there are three or four different ways we can do this philosophically and we'll find one that works. It wasn't that. Briles not only can, but does that all the time. And it's just natural to him. It's like Paul Johnson with the option offense. It's a full-on mastery of what you do. And a good way to think about this is that there's a difference. There's a lot of people that can play like for example, Stairway to Heaven or Jimi Hendrix's solos and that sort of thing. I mean, a lot of people can imitate that stuff, and a lot of people can play it really well and sound almost indistinguishable. But there's still only one Jimmy Page who first wrote and then played Stairway to Heaven. There's still only one Jimi Hendrix. One is a virtuoso. The others are imitators who have learned how to play the notes, but they're not writing that stuff. They're not putting it together. They're not able to just on stage, just riff on it and change it and say, oh, I want to do it this way tonight. It's the difference between someone with true mastery of the craft and someone else. Briles is the former. He has mastery of the craft. And again, another example, it's the difference between someone who can paint a very persuasive imitation of Starry Night and Vincent van Gogh. Like, there's a difference between them. And Briles is the latter. Briles is a virtuoso in that regard. He understands everything inside and out. He has full grasp of what he wants to do. And when he sees something and he says, oh, that didn't work. Well, that didn't work because of this. Well, we can do this, and immediately can wrinkle and shift within the confines of a very flexible offense. He has an offense, not just a system. And that was what was missing last year. So for what it's worth, stuff is not a whole lot is getting out right now. And, you know, not much was reported about the last scrimmage or, you know, a lot of things. It's been pretty quiet about what's going on in camp, but that's because there's a quiet confidence in how things are going and how this offense is going to look. Because Briles and his company, his crew, they know what they're doing. And they're those high paid mercs that come in the movie. And you know those guys mean business. Now, first things first, in terms of philosophy, they're going to find ways to run the football. All of the spacing and wide receiver splits they're known for and everything they do to spread you out, to force you to deal with the deep stuff and all of that is about threatening you so that they can run the ball down your throat. That's what the Briles system is designed to do. First and foremost, and it's similar to Chip Kelly in that regard. He'll spread you out, and then he wants to run for 400 yards. That's what Briles and his group want to do. They want to run the football down your throat. It is a power offense. First and foremost, they're going to try to shove the football down your throat the entire way down the field, and they're going to do it at high tempo so that you get exhausted trying to deal with those double teams up front and dealing with a running back coming straight at you. And they want to do it over and over and over again, and eventually they think you're going to bust. But everything is about running the football. And everything else comes out of that. So it sort of feeds on itself. You're going to spread you out so that you can't stop the run. You don't have enough guys in the box to stop the run. And then once you actually have to make that adjustment because you can't stop the run, now they play action you. Now they RPO you. And you've got a big play on the edge or on the deep route because you had to load up to stop the run. They just want to play a numbers game with you. You put an extra guy there, we're going to run it down your throat. We're going to run it down your throat. You take that extra guy and put him there. Well, we're going to RPO that. We're going to put it on the edge, and good luck tackling that guy. Oh, you're going to put a guy there, and then you're going to try to take that edge away over the top. See ya. It's simplified the game in that regard. It's not all that complicated, but it's understanding how each thing is coordinated and fits together to supplement and complement each other thing within the offense. That's what they do. All right. We're going to get to the position by position part now of the podcast. Before we do that, I want to thank the second sponsor of this show, and that is Garage Makeovers from South Florida. They are the top rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. They serve all of Palm Beach and Broward County, have done so since 2005, and they will take care. They will make your garage the envy of the neighborhood. If you have any need for any garage remodeling, any garage makeover, you call Garage Makeovers. Call Nathan and let him know that you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. Information in the show notes. Now, let's start with the quarterback. It's the most important position on the field, most important position in team sports, and James Blackman is going to be that guy. There wasn't a whole lot of question about that. Things were a little closer in in the fall because Blackman didn't have a great camp. Things were a little closer than I think you'd like. Blackman didn't have a great camp, didn't blow people away. And then Hornibrook actually came in and, you know, he moved the offense some. That said, Blackman is the better choice. He's the right choice. He is a key leader on this team, has excellent rapport with his teammates and with the wide receivers that he's going to be throwing to. He's also got the best physical tools of the three, strongest arm, is able to, when you've got really wide splits and you're throwing to the sideline, you better be able to get it there quickly, and he can. Hornibrook, you're going to be waiting on it a little bit. That said, it is important to temper your enthusiasm, especially early in the year, in terms of what you can expect from Blackman. You got to remember, this is his third offense in 3 years. He's been a college quarterback for 3 years, and he was in the Jimbo Fisher offense, then in Willie Taggart, Walt Bell. It's really Willie Taggart's offense, and then Kendall Briles' offense. Three very different ways of learning football, three different offenses being asked to do very different things. So he's still learning. And I mean, it's like learning French for 1 year. And then all of a sudden, instead of taking French 3, you take French 1 and 2 for 1 year. And then instead of taking French 3, suddenly you're in Spanish 3. And then you take Spanish 3 and 4. And by the time you finish Spanish 4, you're feeling like, well, I can kind of survive this. And then all of a sudden, you restart in Portuguese 3 the next year. It's like, oh my goodness. Or Romanian, right? All of a sudden, you they're all related. They're all Romance languages. And there's some overlap. But each time, each year, you're restarting. And it's a totally different world. And you're going, oh man, like Italian? Really? I thought I was doing French. And so, yeah, that's the biggest thing. He didn't have a great camp, but he had some good moments, and he flashed at different points, and it wasn't an awful camp. But right now, he's still thinking a little bit. He's still late too often. And, you know, he's got a really strong arm and sometimes forces footballs thinking that he can spin it in there. Oh, I'm going to check there, and then I'm going to check there, and I'm going to throw this one. You know, it's late, but I can fit it. Well, maybe I can't. So he's still holding on to it a little bit too long. And again, a lot of that's just a function of having a lot thrown at him at this point. And it's a third offense in 3 years, and he's getting adjusted. So my expectation is that there'll probably be a couple things early in the year where there'll be some mistakes and all that. But the key is to maintain a steady pace forward, and by the end of the year, I think he's going to, we can expect that he'll improve as the season goes and he finds comfort level within his third offense. And it'll take a little bit of time to really hit that stride, but I think second half of the year, he's probably going to be playing really good football. And that's not to say you can't expect him to play well early, but, you know, he's probably not going to look like Trevor Lawrence out there in game one. It's just different. And again, Hornibrook, very physically limited. But he is a viable backup, and if he has to come out there for a little while, it's not disastrous. He can run the offense. He gets it out quickly, and he gets it out quickly in part because he has to. He has to throw it early because if he doesn't, it's not going to get there. Then you have Travis, who is the best athlete of the group. Doesn't have quite as strong an arm as Blackman, but he's got really good anticipation, and long term, I think he can be a good player in this offense, and my sources are really positive about him. But don't expect him to be really getting a lot of time this year, though, again, because he is eligible. Ideally, if you're up big late in games, you can get him some series here and there. But we'll see how often that happens. It's not necessarily the schedule to have that happen a bunch. So the question is, what can we expect from the quarterback position in 2019? What's the ceiling? What's the floor? To me, the ceiling for Blackman and for the quarterback position is top two in the conference. Nobody's going to be better than the Elf. Clemson has the best quarterback in the conference, and by a mile. It's not even close. But the rest of the conference is not real strong quarterback-wise. I mean, the kid up at Virginia is a good player, but top-level Blackman, I'm going to take for what Briles does over him. Sam Howell has a chance to be really good at North Carolina. But first of all, North Carolina's defense isn't going to be especially strong. Carolina's offense is going to score a lot of points. But I'll take year three Blackman over year one Howell. if they're both playing well. So I think that's your ceiling. I mean, there's just, you start looking around the conference and you go, wow, they really, there's not a bunch of quarterback talent right now in the ACC. The floor, well, you know, the floor for the quarterback position, let's say Blackman gets hurt. Now you're looking at Hornibrook or Travis. Now you're looking at, you know, still probably upper middle of the conference, 4-6 range, but not, you know, not great. So somewhere in there, you can kind of slot Florida State's quarterback situation. Now, to me, I think you can, and I'll spend more time on this in the overall team preview, which will be coming here in another day. But basically, I think we can expect, say, a little over 250 yards per game passing, maybe a little bit more than that. And ultimately about 8 yards per attempt. So that comes out to, you know, 3,200 plus passing yards from the starter, and somewhere between 20 and 30 touchdowns would be decent. I wouldn't be surprised if there were about 30 touchdowns from the starter. The question is going to be how many picks. It's not a high interception offense though. So, you know, those are the kind of numbers that I think we'll see. Those are good enough numbers, but I think we'll see those numbers get better as the year goes on, even though the schedule is going to get harder. Now, I had some questions for myself about which group I should go to next, because, you know, want to do running back, do want to do offensive line. I think what I'll do is I'll leave offensive line and running back to kind of do at the end, kind of together, and then we'll do the passing, basic passing positions earlier. So tight end, H-back, we'll do that next as the next position group. So in that group, you've got Trey McKitty, who's a legit NFL prospect. You've got McDonald, who's a legit future NFL prospect. You've got Gabe Neighbors, who's a nice utility piece. And then you have Jalen Goss, because they've decided they're going to go six offensive linemen at different points. Because again, what is the core commitment of the Bryles offense? They're going to run the football. And if that means we have to put six offensive linemen out there, we're going to do it. If that means we have to put seven offensive linemen out there, we're going to do it. If that means we have to put five out there and put four wide receivers standing on the sideline to spread you completely out, then we're going to do it. But we're going to find a way to run the football. That's the way they're doing this. So you're going to see, you know, as much as you hear about the Bryles offense being all about spread and all of this other stuff, you're going to see a lot of 21 personnel, where you're going to see two tight ends, one back. You're going to see some 12, where essentially the H-back is lined up as a fullback, you know, in the sniffer position, basically in a comparable to a fullback position. And then you're going to have, say, an extra offensive lineman out there. So basically two tight, or one tight, and then say Gabe Neighbors as a H-back kind of in the backfield as a blocking guy. You're going to see some of that. You're going to even see two tight ends and then the H-back in the backfield. You'll see some of that. And then they'll find ways to use their personnel to make sure that when it comes time to run it, they're going to run it. They'll base in 11 personnel. I mean, that's what you're going to see the most. Either McKitty or McDonald in there as the tight end H-back more often than not. But you'll see two H-back formations more often than you'd expect. And I'll just say this. They've also got some really nice wrinkles in there for the H-back as a receiver. They really do. There's some there. You'll know them when you see them. But there's some nice wrinkles that I've heard about that, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's clever. Huh. You know, wouldn't have necessarily, they do a really good job of just, you know, it's the same basic concept. You block it the same way everywhere else, but then this one guy just does this one other thing and all of a sudden you got a potential big play. And they've got some nice little wrinkles in there. Expectations for this group, it should be a top three group in the ACC. I mean, McKitty is a really good athlete. If he can get a little more consistent catching the football, you got a weapon. But it's a top three group. There's more talent at the tight end H-back position at Florida State than just about anywhere else in the conference. And I think, you know, roughly 400 receiving yards as a group is about what you're going to get out of the tight end H-back position, because they're going to be used more as blockers than as receivers. But they'll still have some key plays. All right, let's talk about wide receiver. Now, at wide receiver, to me, you can kind of tier this. Tier one, you have Terry. He's your bell cow at the position. He's going to be the guy that every team is, you know, when you're doing your scouting report and when you're getting your secondary ready, you're always wanting to make sure you have 15 circled. You know where he is, always. Make sure you know where he is. You're going to shade coverage that way. He's going to pull coverage his way. Then tier two, you have Helton and Matthews. And in that order, by the way, I think Helton, give me Helton at slot first and foremost. Those guys can play, though. And this is an offense that is designed in such a way that the slot receiver can eat. Because in a lot of offenses, the slot receiver is, you know, about 5-6 yards outside the offensive tackle. And so you can kind of use a combination of coverage looks where you know, use a backer to kind of come up underneath where the slot's going to be, play the safety over top. And then maybe you have a little bit of help on the outside, depending on what kind of coverage you're playing. Let's say a cover two, you got a little help out there in the flat from the corner there. That's great. But when you use the splits and so on that Briles does, now you have the outside receiver oftentimes lined up. I mean, we saw it last year, lined up really wide. And the corner has to go out almost all the way out there with him. And then the slot receiver is lined up effectively where the number one receiver is for a more traditional split. And that means that you're getting your slot receiver generally against a lesser corner, or generally a safety, but against a lesser DB in terms of coverage. You're taking your slot receiver and getting him out there in a one-on-one type situation as though that's their corner. And usually that's their third or fourth best cover guy. And you can put your slot receiver there and demand that guy one-on-one cover him out in space. So this offense really allows quick and fast slot receivers to do some things, because they're going to be able to draw, say, third or fourth best cover guy on the other team in single coverage with all the space that a number one receiver normally would. That's advantageous. So you're going to see some big plays from Helton and Matthews this year, especially because Terry's going to take some of the coverage from them. And you're going to see a lot of slot choice. One of the things that Briles does is there's a lot of route adjustments. You heard people complain about that with Jimbo Fisher. Like, oh, all these route adjustments. And it's so hard for... It is really not that hard to adjust your route. But what Briles has done philosophically, they took Yeoman's veer option and, you know, running tracks with the double teams up front, getting vertical displacement in the running game. And they married that with Mouse Davis's run and shoot stuff. And that's where the run and shoot wide receiver in true run and shoot stuff is coming off the line of scrimmage and has almost a complete autonomy on what route he runs. It's going to be completely dependent on what the defensive back is doing and what the coverage is. You're coming off the line with a vertical release, and if he plays over the top, you sit it down. He plays over the top with this leverage, you come inside him. He plays over the top with other leverage, and you go outside him. He plays, you know, plays hard, and you just go run right by him. I mean, you could do all four of those on the same play. And the quarterback just has to stay on the same page with you. Now, that takes a little bit of adjustment. We saw it with Jimbo Fisher. Takes a little bit of adjustment, takes a little bit of time to learn. But modern offensive football and college football generally expects that wide receivers are going to do that kind of adjustment, and that quarterbacks are going to be able to adjust with them, that you read the same thing, that you recognize what's going on, you key off of that guy, and you say, when he does this, when he zigs, you zag, and I'm going to throw that. Now, again, that can mean that you're throwing a little bit late as a quarterback. Until you get it, until it starts to really click, and then you get rid of it a little earlier, and then you're throwing up silly numbers, just silly numbers. And so that's what you're going to see, and you're going to see those slot guys running wide open at times. And they can make plays. Then the next tier down, I think you've got Pokey Wilson and Keith Gavin. Pokey had a great camp. He's a guy that, you know, he's listed as the guy right under Keith Gavin, and Gavin's going to play, but that's partly because Gavin is more complete. He's a big guy that gives you a blocker on the edge. He gives you, you know, physically, he's the guy that you look at and you're like, man, that dude is a freak. And when he catches it, he's pretty special. I mean, go back to that Alabama game in 2017, and Gavin pretty well destroyed that Alabama corner, those Alabama corners. DeAndre missed him a couple times, both in terms of not making throws when he was wide open and also in terms of just missing him with throws. But when he plays like that, he's a weapon. You're talking about an NFL type guy. So that's your next level of guys. And really, I expect Pokey to be to have a really good year. I mean, he at different points in camp, I mean, one of my sources said he's looked almost indistinguishable from Rashad Green running around in that 80, which is really high praise. Just so smooth, just gets up to speed, doesn't do it flashy, but all of a sudden you see that, oh, there he goes, running away again. And then you have the young guys, Treshawn Harrison, Warren Thompson, Jordan Young, and all of them are going to have something to say this year. Treshawn, they're going to make an effort to get him the ball more because he's just a special athlete, but they're going to have to get him the ball in a variety of ways. I mean, he'll be in the slot, he'll be in the backfield. They're kind of doing a Percy Harvin type thing with him, using him as a slash, just as an athlete to get him the ball as much as they can in the right moments. And then you have Warren Thompson and Jordan Young. And those two have come further than I expected they would at this point in camp. Generally speaking, though, remember that the hype for wide receivers coming in a fall camp, the hype usually outpaces the actual production by about a year. But both of those guys have, again, it got to me, both of those guys have looked really good. Warren Thompson is one of the best route runners on the team already. Now, he's had more than his share of drops, which has been part of why he has not just gone up and taken a job. He's just too inconsistent with his hands. Jordan Young, on the other hand, has caught most of what's been thrown his way, and as an athlete, is a rare athlete. And the other thing is, Blackman really likes throwing to Jordan Young. He trusts him. And so he's a guy that, you know, over the course of the year, late in the year, you might start seeing a little bit more of, but next year, look out for those two guys. Now, as far as expectations for this group, the ceiling of this group is second best in the ACC. Clemson, they're not going to be better than Clemson's receivers. Sorry, just not happening. But they can be right there with Clemson, not much gap. I mean, Terry is not massively worse than what Clemson's putting out there. Helton and Matthews are both outstanding slots that would get playing time at Clemson. So, I mean, they're and the young guys are all Clemson caliber receivers. It's weird to say that. But there isn't a whole lot of talent gap there, but Clemson's got the best group, and they're going to look like the best group partly because they have the elf throwing to them. Right? I mean, that's going to make them look that much better. Now, as far as floor, let's say Terry doesn't return from injury the way that he could, or gets re-injured, and now you've got some other things, you know, that have come into play. The light bulb doesn't wind up going on for Gavin in his senior year, and you've got some inconsistency there. The floor is like fifth best in the ACC, behind, say, Clemson, Virginia Tech, probably North Carolina, maybe NC State. So that's where the floor is for that group. But I expect them to have a quality year and ultimately to be in that second or third area in the ACC, along with, you know, Clemson and Virginia Tech, most likely as the best groups in the ACC at that position. They're going to be a weapon. It's going to be difficult. They're going to force teams to cover them downfield, and they're going to give Blackman some options. But it all really does come down to this final position group that we're talking about, and that's the offensive line. Before we talk offensive line, though, let me give a shout out to Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. As always, listen, he's the best in the business in Jacksonville, in the Jacksonville area. If you have any real estate needs in the greater Jacksonville area, call Luis. Let him know you heard about him on the Unconquered podcast, and he'll take care of you. He'll take care of you even if you don't let him know that you heard about him on the Unconquered podcast, but then that doesn't help me all that much. So anyway, offensive line. Talking offensive line here, again, the best way to put what we're seeing and what has trickled back to me from camp is the words night and day. It's just completely different from last year. Now, obviously, the coaching staff would rather have Landon Dickerson, Josh Ball, Cole Minshew, some of those guys available to play out there. Yeah, they'd love to have that. That would be even better You know, they would feel much more secure if, say, Alabama's best offensive linemen were out there for Florida State still. So, yeah, we can compare to what might have been. And they'd be better, no doubt. That said, when we're comparing to last year, which is really the most recent, you know, that's the thing everybody wants to know, is how much better are they going to be than last year? Because they were historically bad last year. Well, they're going to be a lot better than last year. And again, let's go back to something we've talked about in the past, and that's if you want to evaluate coming into a year, go position by position and see where the upgrades are and where, you know, you can expect it to be basically neutral and where it's a potential downgrade. So let's look at last year's offensive line. You had a essentially crippled Juwan Williams, Abdul Bello, and Brady Scott as offensive tackle options once Landon Dickerson went down in game one. Yeah, that's not good, right? If Juwan Williams, who has gotten much stronger, he's had his first healthy offseason since he's been in college, if he's able to shore up that left tackle position, suddenly you're much better at the left tackle position than you were last year, because it was a train wreck last year. And then you have Ryan Roberts, who's come in and shored up the right tackle spot, and he can be at least average. If he can be average, he's going to be better than what they had at right tackle. Because you had the best case that they had last year at right tackle was playing guard Brady Scott at right tackle. Roberts is at least a true right tackle, and he can be average to above average at that position. And then that lets you play Scott at left guard, where last year you had Arthur Williams, who was a defensive tackle who oftentimes didn't really know what he was doing because, again, the situation of organization and coordination on the offense was just not very good, and you have a first-year, fifth-year senior playing on the at that position. Scott is a significant upgrade there. So now you're three upgrades. Then you got right guard. And last year you had Cole Minshew when he was healthy. When Minshew was healthy, yeah, you'll take him over Dante Lucas at least early this year because of the experience. But once Lucas really figures things out, He is quicker, he's more mobile, he's got better feet than Minshew, and he's no less powerful. So we can call that a little bit of a loss early in the year and probably a gain later in the year, as long as he stays healthy. And then you have Bavion Johnson at center and taking over for Alec Eberle, who was the best offensive lineman on last year's team and was reliable for multiple years at the center position, though, you know, fans didn't always recognize what was happening. Center's a tough position to play. Bavion's a little stronger than Eberle was, maybe a little less consistent, but we'll call that a draw. So if Bavion gives you basically what Eberle did, you're getting roughly the same level of production at the center position, and then better production at three of the four other positions, and roughly even at that fourth position. That's improvement. Now, that's just personnel. We haven't considered what they're doing scheme-wise. We haven't considered some of those other things. And then you add that they're going to toss Jalen Goss out there in the six offensive lineman package. They're going to, instead of hanging your, when your offensive line sucks, just as a general rule, in my opinion, if your offensive line is absolutely terrible, asking them to block as a five-man unit against, say, a five-man blitz, while five guys go out to receive the pass is oftentimes a bad idea. We talked about this last year in the film breakdowns. Like, why in the world are they not using, you know, why are they not chipping here? Why aren't they keeping the tight end here? You know, this is setting up your tackle to fail. They're not doing that as much. You're going to see a lot more max protect, six and seven man protection packages, just to make sure that the quarterback stays upright. And partly because so much of the passing game is going to come off of play action and RPO. So you're going to see, say, tackle and guard double team the defensive tackle, while the H-back actually takes the edge rusher. And the quarterback is play action passing, and the edge rusher's going to have an advantage on the tight end, but Here's the thing. The tight end is going to get a little help from the running back, and the quarterback's getting the ball out on play action, and everybody else is double teamed. That's what they're going to do. That sort of thing. Places lower demands on your tackles. You're scheming ways to get guys blocked, and you're blocking them in part because you're forcing them to take into account the run and the RPO stuff. And, you know, in the running game, a lot more double teams. They're going to emphasize getting vertical displacement. Get the running back to the second level. And you know what? If he has to make a guy miss to get 7-8 yards, that's great. But he's at least going to get 3 before he gets hit. And if the linebacker hits him at 3, then have the running back get us 4. And you know what? We can quick snap it again, and running back can get us 4 again, and then quick snap it again, and we're getting 4 again, and now it's first down. That's how they're going to approach this. So some of it is just helping your personnel with scheme and recognizing that guy doesn't do that very well, so we're not going to ask him to do that. But he does this pretty well, and so we're going to ask him to do that. And then these 5 guys as a unit do these 5 things really well, so that's what we're going to make our bread and butter. We're going to base off of that, and then everything else is going to come from there. That's how they're going to do it. So they've actually been decent in camp, to the point where Florida State's offense has been able to run the football on their defense at times in camp. Not always, not every play. And you don't want it. You wouldn't want it to be every play. But the fact that that offensive line has been able to run the football against, say, a defensive line of Durden, Marvin Wilson, and Cooper, that they've actually been able to move those guys enough to actually have 4 or 5 yards a pop on you know, certain drives. Hello. So that tells you that they're not just straight awful at that point. Now, they're going to need to stay relatively healthy, because you have Bavion Johnson go down at center, and you got Boselli out there, and he's just not strong enough. Basically, you're going to have somebody more or less like Eberle, but not quite as reliable as Eberle, and it's just not ideal in terms of the physical situation. And then Arnold is fat, can't pass protect really because he just doesn't move well enough, but he can be decent enough in the running game. He's going to play some. He's going to be the first guard off the bench. Armstrong, young, but he's learning. Physical guy, figuring it out. He'll be out. He'll get some time. Bello will see some time at left tackle when Juwan Williams is tired, and you're going to see that at times just because the offense will be taking so many snaps. Bello will play, and then you have Neal, who is really your flex tackle. He's the main right tackle backup. But if they had to replace somebody, Juwan Williams went down at left tackle, it would be a coin flip on whether or not I think they'd go with Neal or with Bello at that left tackle spot. And that would be a problem, because right now, Juwan Williams has looked like a real life ACC level offensive tackle in practice. They didn't have one of those last year, not one. That at least gives you one, and Roberts gives you 2. If one of those guys goes down, then your drop off there is pretty significant. So they need to stay healthy. But if they're able to stay healthy, let's get to the expectations part. If they're able to stay healthy, then I think the ceiling for this group is top 4 in the ACC, top 3 in the ACC. Yeah, I said that. Yeah. Like that's how much improvement you could have. That this could be a top 4 or 5. Top 3 or 4 group in the ACC. The floor is probably 8th or 9th. That means you had a couple injuries at the key spots. Now you're playing Boselli at center. You got, you know, one of the other tackles at left tackle. And now, you know, that's not good. You're going to have to scheme around that, the quality of the offensive line the rest of the year for sure. But that's still better than it was last year. Remember, this offensive line in the advanced metrics was ranked in like the 110s or 120s last year. Improvement to the 70s nationally would be huge, would be pretty much historic. And aside from injuries, you know, injuries could impact that. But if healthy, here's where I'm going to call my shot again. Expect improvements from this offensive line such that they don't they not only go from awful, from abject horrible to bad or just below average, you know, into the, say, 60s somewhere nationally, I think you're going to see them get into like the 40s or 50s if they stay healthy. I think above the mid-50s is where their ceiling is, or where they're most likely to end up. The ceiling is actually probably in the 30s, maybe 40s. But I think they'll end up somewhere in the mid-50s nationally. So that's average to above average. And what that means is they're going to have some issues in pass protection here and there, but they are going to be able to run the football. Because the other thing that you have on this team is the strength of the offense is at running back. Akers is a workhorse. You're going to see LeBourne and Grant get carries. They're going to need to because the number of the tempo and the workload that you're going to see from this offense. But you're going to see those guys touch the ball a lot. Historically, Briles' offense has not thrown to the running backs very much. I don't remember how many. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but you know it's something like, you know, somewhere between 10 and 25 or so throws to the backs in a given year at different points. I mean, they have not thrown to the backs much, partly because they do so much off of play action, RPO, and all that. So the back is actually in the pass protection rather than out for receiving stuff. But one thing to remember, Briles will adjust to his personnel. And one thing that has leaked out of camp is that the running backs have touched the ball a decent amount in the passing game. They've thrown it to them more than Briles has in past offenses, partly because Akers and LeBourne and Grant catch it better than a lot of backs do. No, he'll adjust to what they do. And you know, if you do think that you're going to need to scheme around your offensive line at different points, then getting the ball into the hands of your playmakers through the passing game is smart. And they're ready to do that. When things aren't quite working up front, well, we'll find ways to get the ball, get a running game out of the edge stuff and out of getting, you know, the ball in the hands of the running backs in the passing game. And then you have beyond those three, you've got Sheffield, and then Harrison is also going to see some time in the backfield. Again, as a kind of Percy Harvin type. And you'll see some triple option type stuff with Harrison as the pitch man. You'll see him come in and create a ponies two back look. I don't expect to see a lot of Akers and LeBourne on the field at the same time, by the way. I don't think that'll happen that much. But you will see Harrison and one of the others in the backfield as a ponies package a decent amount. That's going to happen. And then sometimes you'll see a slot receiver lined up back there that, you know, it's just for motion purposes. Now, what can we expect then from the running backs? Well, I think we're looking at that running back group as top two in the ACC. Clemson, Miami, and North Carolina, the three groups. I guess you could throw Boston College in there just because they're one guy. But basically, I think this group with Akers, LeBourne, and Grant is top two in the ACC, along with Clemson. Again, you can argue for Miami or UNC. Not so much UNC, but Clemson or Miami in terms of overall running back quality. And if they play like they could, you're looking at really only Clemson. And they've got some really good backs, one in particular, that competes with what Florida State has on the roster. Now, in terms of floor, one or two of those guys goes down, and now you're hurting a little bit. Now you're behind, say, Clemson, Miami, UNC, and BC in terms of quality of backs, but you're still top five or so in the ACC. But ultimately, what I expect to see happen from the running game this year, I think we'll see over 2,500 yards, and they're going to average over 5 yards a carry. I'm calling my shot. I think that's what we're going to see on the year. Just for perspective, last year, Florida State ran for 1,093 yards in the 12 games, average 2.79 yards per carry. I think they will almost double that yards per carry, and they will more than double the total number of yards rushing on the year. 2,500 rushing yards overall. And I think we'll see roughly 1,500 yards from Akers this year. If he stays healthy, you're going to see around a 1,500-yard year because Briles will use the heck out of him because he is a special player, and Briles understands exactly how to get what he wants out of Akers in this offense. That's what you're going to see in this offense. They're going to run the football. They're going to run it, and they're going to run it well. The offensive line is actually going to be decent in run blocking, and you're going to see the running backs shine when they get the football in the open field. Now, they are playing a very good run defense out the gate. So we'll see how that goes. If they're able to run the football more or less at will against Boise State, look out. You know, don't necessarily expect 200 and 250 yards against Boise State. But I think they'll be roughly 200. They'll be roughly a 200 yard per game rushing average on the year. Which that is night and day from last year. And that opens up the passing game pretty significantly. So even if Blackman is not exactly comfortable yet, that makes it a lot easier to be comfortable. Because defenses start to have to load up against that. And that's what teams are going to do. They're going to try to load up, and they're going to try to force Blackman to beat them. But I think we're going to see a historic offensive turnaround this year. There is talent on this roster. Anybody who tells you that there just aren't five Florida State level offensive linemen on this roster, that's just not true. There's talent there. But they've been badly developed. They've been badly coordinated. They've been terribly mismanaged. And the coordination and management problem has been fixed. And development is starting to happen. And those guys didn't suddenly just become awful athletes. They weren't developed, but they're starting to actually show some strides. So the real question is, what is the ceiling for this offense, for the Florida State offense? What is the ceiling? And this actually is a really difficult question to answer. Because in the past, any offense that was as bad as Florida State's offense, and Florida State's offense was bad last year. They were 97th in S&P Plus last year, offensively. Just bad. They were 121st in success rate last year. Sixth, though, but this tells you something. They were sixth in explosiveness last year. So they had no consistency, but if their skill guys got the ball, you know, into the secondary kind of thing, then they were really, really good. That tells you that there's still talent there, but that just shows how much the offensive line held things back. But historically, any offense that's been that bad, the next year, you know, a great bounce back is like into the average range, say in the 60s or 50s, even. You know what? It would be historic for Florida State to go from 97th in S&P Plus to the 40s. That would be an amazing accomplishment from Briles and that offensive group to get them to have that kind of turnaround in 1 year, particularly given what's going on the offensive line and what they looked like last year. I'm going to call my shot though. I'm going to trust my sources here. My most trusted practice source has been saying, this is a top 25 offense, man. This same person was concerned going into last year, but he's going, this is a top 25 offense. I know how bad they were last year. This is a top 25 offense. And I'm kind of blinking. But the more I look at it, look, the talent is still there. Terry is elite. Akers is elite. Those slot receivers, excellent. You got a quality quarterback, unlike last year. If you have a competent offensive line, which it looks like they might, the ceiling for that group is really top 15 nationally. Top two in the ACC. Behind Clemson. Nobody's going to be better than Clemson offensively this year. Alabama and Clemson are in a different world offensively this year. Again, quarterbacks. Top two in the ACC, top 15 nationally, that is actually around where the ceiling hits for this team. And it's not out of the question. Now, the floor is also, you know, the disparity between ceiling and floor is really big. Because you have a few injuries on the offensive line. Maybe you get an injury at quarterback. You know, a few things, you know, Juwan Williams mentally implodes or something like that. And all of a sudden, you're looking at 80th nationally. I think they're going to be better than last year, regardless, just because it's a better product and they're coordinated better and they're better coached this year than they were last year. But I'd say the floor is probably in the 70s or 80s, low 80s, but I'd say 70s-ish nationally, top five or six in the ACC. That's your floor. But the ceiling is top 15. They could be a top 15 offense this year. And I think, ultimately, my expectation is that they will be in the top 30 nationally and that they'll be top three in the ACC. When it's all said and done, if we're going by, let's say, S&P plus offensive rankings, I think at the end of 2019, this offense will be in the top 30 and the top three in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I know there's some of you out there going, oh, wow, you are pumping some sunshine. And maybe I am. But again, look at the talent on the roster. And you're combining that with guys who can actually coach, who can actually coordinate this. It's not a comparable situation to when, say, Utah or Washington State has a 100-level offense and then improves to 70th. They don't have top 10 talent. Florida State still does have top 5 talent at the skill positions. And they've still got some guys that were 4-star and actually a couple 5-star recruits that are starting on the offensive line. All it takes is for some of those things to click and you go from being a terrible offense to being one of the best in the country. Because again, it's not comparable to other situations. The talent, when other teams have been in the hundreds, it's generally largely because of lack of talent as much as anything. And yeah, the last year, the offensive line, you could make a case that there was a lack of talent, but there is talent on the roster. There's sufficient talent to be a top 15 offense. I think they'll be top 30. We'll talk more about exactly where I think they'll fall in the overall season preview, but I think you're going to see a team that's going to average in the mid-30s in terms of points per game. Now, points per game is a little bit less important when you're playing at the tempo that they're averaging or that they're going to be playing at, but they're going to score some points. They're going to move the football. They're going to run the football. And that's going to make things look a lot different. And I think it's going to take all of about 3 drives. It'll take 1 quarter against Boise State for people to start going, oh, wow. We underestimated Florida State this year. They actually are going to have an offense. They're actually going to be competent. They're going to be, and by the end of the first quarter, you're going to have people going, that's a team that's going to be one of the 2 or 3 best in the ACC. It'll only take a little bit of time. It'll be obvious. Because the difference between a well-coordinated offense and one that's not is pretty visible. And I want to thank, before I go, I want to thank those who are above the bleached numbers level of support on Patreon, or Patreon, if you prefer, but I prefer Patreon. And that is Keith Chaney, Casey Kidd, Chris Chartrand, Bert Bertoldi. Very much appreciate all of your guys' support. You guys have been a huge help over the last year, not quite last year that I've been doing that side of things. If you want to support the podcast, if you want to support the video projects that I'm doing over there, you can go to patreon.com/unconqueredpodcast. That's patreon.com/unconqueredpodcast. And feel free to, I'd love to have you subscribe and be a part of that community. I'm going to be doing some live shows, some live audio shows, and also the live video recordings over the course of the regular season. And also, if you've not left a 5-star review for this podcast in a while, please do. It definitely helps push us up in the rankings. And, you know, I feel like we put out a pretty good product. Didn't do as much this offseason for a number of reasons, but I don't think anybody outworks us or gives better information once the season rolls around. So if you regularly listen to this podcast, please leave a review, especially on Apple Music, which dominates the sphere in terms of helping with rankings and all of that. Makes a big difference. I'd love to be over 1,000 over the next couple months. Let's say get over 1,000 by the end of October in terms of 5-star reviews. Let's see if we can hit that as a podcast. Anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap there. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.